This is Scott Allen from odecoded.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Coon from lazycoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code this week. Recorded tax day, April 15th, 2009. Be sure to mail in everything before midnight. This week we're going to talk about being a one-man ISV, one-man startup. We've kind of discussed this a little bit before in terms of why people don't run on the full Microsoft stack, but we're going to kind of talk about our setup and kind of what it takes to really get going on any platform, Microsoft or otherwise, if you just want to write cool software for yourself. So one of the things that I found is interesting is that there's so many free online office suites and kind of invoicing and financial suites specifically catered towards freelance people that you could adopt in a startup or business setting. I recently had to invoice for something and I did a search for, you know, online invoicing tool and got like, you know, a gajillion hits. Google Docs has like 3 invoicing templates built in. Zoho, I'm sure, has some. Office Online, I'm sure, will have some. People are just throwing away hard drive space left and right at you. You've got SkyDrive. You've got Box.net. You've got Dropbox. Tons of places where you can store, you know, client files. And hosting is getting cheaper and cheaper. And with Azure coming along, it looks like you're going to be able to, between Azure and Google App Engine, you'll be able to scale up your operation if you grow pretty cheaply and easily. So, John, what do you think about that?
Well, one other thing, too, is in case you want to make money or even just have your setup pay for itself, there's so many more options now to do that. You know, it's 10 years ago or, you know, even 5 years ago, to if you wanted to get paid, you need to set up to accept credit card payment, or if you wanted to do advertising, you had to, you know, find some kind of advertising network. I mean, now, I mean, it sounds stupid to even talk about it, how simple that is. You know, micropayments are cheap and easy to set up. You can set up advertising and payment in, you know, 20 minutes. And, you know, and if you were asking how to do it, people would look at you funny because it's obvious. So, I think that's another big deal with that is just the way money changes hands is so much simpler now too, in case you're looking at it as a business.
Yeah, the thing that kind of, I think we've talked a little bit about this before, but the thing that kind of clued me in at one point that you could, you know, you could really do this sort of one person business kind of thing was the whole story of Marcus Frind and Plenty of Fish, which is, you know, has been talked about to death, so we don't need to go back into it, but he was sort of the first guy that I had heard of that was, you know, making big ad dollars just running a little one-person startup shop. You know, he happened to get a jillion clients and was able to, you know, I think he kind of got into AdSense at the right time when he was kind of new and he was able to kind of figure out how to maximize stuff. But, you know, that was kind of the first clue, like, the first big sort of light in my head that said, wow, you know, you don't have to go get funding. You don't have to, you can make something useful people can use and just do it, you know, on your own. I think it's a pretty cool story.
So you've launched something recently here, didn't you? Are you planning on doing a donate or advertising kind of thing for it? Or was it just an itch you needed to scratch?
Yeah. The site that I just put up was called reviewtoq.com, and it was totally just scratching an itch for me. It's like, I wanted this site. It didn't exist. And so, you know, this is one of the cool, really cool things about being a software developer is like, you can just go and build it, you know? And so, I mean, it's a very simple concept. It's a very simple site, not a lot of code, but it's basically the idea is sort of pull together. The idea was to automate my sort of weekly process of, you know, I don't get to the movie theaters very much since I have kids. So every week I would go through and like read the movie reviews for the new movies and, you know, go to Netflix and save the interesting movies onto my queue. so that when they were actually released on video, I would get them. And it was just something that I did every week, and it was kind of a pain. And it occurred to me that, you know, little bit of code, and I could sort of streamline this process a little bit. So that was the site that I put together. It gives you a list of, you know, list of the new movies this week and links to the reviews, and then a save button right there that saves it right to your queue. Like, really kind of a simple thing. I don't expect it to, like, make any money, really, although I did put some AdSense ads just on it just to try it. Mostly I just built it for me, and I think, you know, some other people might find it useful too, so I put it up on the web, and it's so easy to do that now. I think it's really cool that, you know, hosting is super cheap. It's really easy to just, you know, if you're a software developer, to, like, throw stuff together. There's a lot of just data out there that you can pull in and, you know, mix together and remix and munge up, and more services are making APIs. Like, for my stuff, I use the Netflix APIs. You know, services are making all kinds of APIs to let you remix this stuff. So it's really kind of a cool time, in my opinion. Like, you can really do something that's kind of useful to people without really all that much work.
So what were the technical details there, Kevin? How'd you put that together?
Well, it's a ASP.NET MVC site. Very basic one. I mean, it's basically two pages, and it's only really one page because the other page is an about page. And it just kind of mixes up some stuff. It pulls an RSS feed from one site, and it, you know, uses the Netflix API to kind of pull together some of the movie information and give you that link that says saved to my queue. You know, it's not really a huge amount of code, and there's nothing really magical about it. I'm hosting on Azure, which is one kind of interesting thing, mostly because, like, it's sort of free hosting right now. I'm not using any, like, particular Azure services or, like, you know, I'm not even using a database. It's just pulling together RSS feeds and stuff. But Azure's there. You can throw stuff up there pretty easily right now. I don't know whether I'll keep it there. They haven't announced any pricing information, as we've talked about in the past, and so it may not make sense. But as a hosting service, it's just kind of there, and it kind of works, and is pretty easy to deal with. Yeah, so that's it. I mean, it's not a whole lot, of code, and not a whole lot of, you know, I just sort of did it in my spare time after work. So it scratches my itch, which is kind of what my goal was.
How did the Azure stuff work for you? What was your experience with that?
It was a little rockier than I think I expected. I mean, nothing huge, but, like, the first time I uploaded my project, you know, it has this sort of process where you upload your project into a staging area, and then you can activate your project and work with it in its staging area, and then you can promote it to production when you're ready. And so that process was a little rocky when I first did it. Like, I tried to activate the staging area, and it took like a half an hour when it's only supposed to take like 2 minutes, and it was inaccessible for a while even after it activated. And so I reported that to the Azure guys, and it sounds like they're trying to work, you know, figure out what happened there. And so, you know, it definitely was a little rockier than I would have expected but it's CTP, so I guess, and it's free, so I can't complain too much. It's a little bit, you know, the fact that you have to go through this process of, like, you package up your app, you put it into staging, you test it in staging, you promote it to production, definitely has some drawbacks. I was kind of complaining a little bit about this today on Twitter because I had just pushed a new version out last night that didn't work on IE8 in standards mode. I mean, it didn't render right, so I needed to do a CSS tweak. Very simple, like, one-line CSS tweak, but in order to do that, hosting on Azure, you have to, you know, rebuild your app, upload it to staging, promote it to production. So for simple little, like, quick, you know, changes, it's actually not as frictionless as I would like it to be. But aside from that, you know, it's been pretty good. The Visual Studio tools work pretty well. And one thing that's a little weird about Azure is in this, especially with, like, database access stuff, it's kind of in this weird intermediate stage where they're, like, completely changing their whole database strategy behind it. So I was thinking about, you know, hey, I could, I, you know, I have some stuff I could put into a database here, but it's in this like weird, you know, limbo where, you know, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to build stuff on their current database model because, you know, they're going to just completely replace it in the summertime. So that's been a little bit of a pain.
So originally they had their database model was kind of this whole, I forget what it's called, but like it's just all key value pair stuff, right? And then they're changing to include full relational access, which I think is what people were asking for. But I thought that they were having both. Like they weren't tossing out the old, they were just adding on. Did I read that wrong? Or I don't know.
Well, my understanding is that so they actually currently have two database schemes. They have their like basic table stuff, which is sort of totally non-relational in any way. And then they have their pseudo-relational stuff that's more like the actual SQL data services. And the SQL data services is basically being wholesale replaced by, you know, this new fully relational model that, you know, doesn't use the REST API and, you know, uses TDS and all this stuff. And they're keeping the old sort of, you know, blob table model. But that middle thing, that, you know, pseudo-relational stuff, as far as I know, is being axed completely. Or maybe they're going to put some of that functionality into the more basic table storage. But that hasn't really been announced that I've seen. So I don't know. It's also, I might be able to do something with that. I'm forgetting the proper term for it. It's not, you know, this sort of low-grade, non-relational thing, table storage or something like that. But anyway, what I really want is just a relational database, and that just isn't available yet.
What kind of, like, I was thinking of that when I was first looking at it. I was like, oh, this is a cool system. And then I was saying, hey, this, the way you've got it set up, at least, there's no, you're just calling APIs and, you know, when you add to the queue, it goes right back out. So you're putting information together in a good way, but you don't have any data. You've got a store and you don't have any membership or anything like that. I mean, what have you thought about what sort of things you would want to add on? Or are you not prepared to talk about your future plans?
Well, I don't want to tip my hand to all my competitors. No. yeah, I definitely have thought a little bit. I mean, like, for example, currently the site just shows you this week's stuff. You know, new releases this week. And, I'd like to be able to... And that's just, you know, going to an RSS feed. And by the way, you'd think that an RSS feed that... There would be a million RSS feeds that show you new movies out this week. That is not true. That was actually incredibly painful to come up with. But anyway, I'd love to be able to, you know, keep a history of those. So it's not just, you know, this week's, but last week's and last month's and everything that's in the theaters and, you know, that sort of stuff. That would require some storage, obviously, and a little bit more sophistication than what the very primitive thing is right now.
So you set up Google Ads. I mean, did you think about anything else? Like what other kind of ad options there would be that would work with movies or that kind of thing? Big Netflix banner.
Well, I actually tried to sign up for the Netflix affiliate program, which is like a, you know, if you link, you give them a link to a 30-day free trial if they're not already a Netflix member. But they rejected me from the program, if you can believe that. I have no idea why.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
So, you know, they send you this generic email response that's like, you know, one of these reasons might be why we did not accept you. A, your site is down, you know, and inaccessible. B, you don't have enough traffic. You know, C, your site is offensive. It was like, I have no idea what. Anyway, I thought that was really bizarro. But aside from that, you know, I haven't given it much thought beyond, I wonder what other options there are, because I don't really have a lot of time to go and research ad kinds of ad network stuff. And, you know, I just sort of threw that on there because it's quick and easy. And I used to have AdSense ads on my blog that, you know, I think over the lifetime of my blog, over the last 7 years, has paid out like $200. So not exactly a huge moneymaker, but...
I don't make much off blog ads, but I've been surprised. Like it kind of, it's definitely, what's the term for it? It's asymptotic, or it definitely shoots up more quickly. I know, like, you know, friends that were watching the ads more closely and really got into them were, you know, at times would say, yeah, I made this much on my ads. I'm like, really? You know, I mean, it's, I guess if you really get into it, it's, you know, just off of a blog, it's, in a way, it's, you can make more off of that than a lot of other kind of businesses actually selling a product or something. Our ads on, we've got the one little ad on the Herding Code site that is just about broken even on our hosting costs, which, you know, we have the big $5 a month.
$5 a month?
Yeah, yeah. So.
Wow. Well, that's, and, you know, that's, in some ways, that's always been my goal. Like, before I went with the Azure thing, I would start looking around at sort of, you know, super cheapo shared hosting options on for Review2Q. And, you know, it's amazing how little it costs to put up a website, you know, just including like database access, even if you want it, you know, $5-6 a month, and you can throw something out there. And if, you know, if people like it and it happens to be a success, then, you know, you can go from there, but it requires such little investment up front. It's really kind of cool.
Also, with all the, you know, I mean, definitely design matters, but there's so many templates out there now too, like, you know, open source web design, or most, you know, store systems have some decent templates, or, you know, most kind of blog systems, if that's what you're doing. And then you can combine them together. So it's not too hard to have a store and blog just, you know, link together and grab a... I just remember earlier on, you know, people, like, when the web was newer, you know, it was like, yeah, I'm going to start up a web business, so I need to go out and do this and do this and this, and then you're looking at, you know, a year and $1,500 or more, you know, just to kind of throw a play thing together, and whereas now it's kind of like you can really put something together in an afternoon if you keep it really simple.
Yeah, the design thing is kind of an interesting one. I kind of cheated on that one. If I had designed the site, you know, it would have looked like dog stuff because I have no design chops whatsoever. But I do happen to be married to a web designer, so I kind of cheated.
How convenient.
So I guess I can't really call it a one-person, you know, web business. It's really kind of a two-person thing. But you're right. I mean, I'm sure that there are templates out there that people with my design skills could take advantage of to at least make something that doesn't look like complete crap.
For instance, the Herding Code site, I mean, could be better, but it's not... It's okay. It's not egregiously bad, and it was basically... It's WordPress, and it's, you know, I surfed around for an hour or so on, I forget, it was some, you know, free WordPress theme site, and grabbed the one that kind of appealed to me, and then threw together a logo that matched those colors, and, you know, called it an hour. So, you know, and then if you want to change it later, the theme system in WordPress makes it pretty easy to do that without having to redo everything. So...
Well, if you guys had an itch that you needed to scratch, I mean, what kind of sites would you guys like? Have you ever had that experience where you're like, damn, I really wish somebody would just make this site? Because, like, there's this, some stupid little thing that I really want, you know, that's not a lot of work, but nobody has made yet. I mean, do you guys think about that kind of stuff? Do you?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I've been talking
about it. Why haven't you done it?
No, I'm drawing a blank. I'm trying to think what I was thinking of just this week that I just might do myself because I'm irritated that no one else has done it yet. And I can't remember.
That's why you don't do it. You know what you need is a website where you can write down your ideas for websites. That was a joke.
I have a OneNote area dedicated to this stuff. Maybe I'll put it in there. Let me look. I love OneNote. I don't know if anyone else uses it, but
I have used it in the past, but I increasingly don't like being constrained to a local, you know, one machine.
Yep.
So I'm tending to use Google Docs for more of that kind of stuff.
I have one site, and it's kind of turned into my little Hello World site. It has to do with, you know, the gift exchange kind of idea. And I've seen people have done things like it, but they've never done exactly what I wanted to do. And I've built it in classic ASP. And then when I learned a little more, I rebuilt it in a better version of classic ASP. And then I've built it in every version of ASP.NET. But the problem with it is it's not really a necessary thing. And so I always start it close to Christmas, and then Christmas passes, and I say, I'll get to it next year. And then a new version of ASP.NET comes out, and I restart. But I have used it as kind of a good way to learn each new version. I don't know. I think the problem is that there's just, for most things, people crank stuff out so quickly that usually anytime nowadays when I want to find something, I'll just search for it and be like, oh yeah, somebody just wrote something pretty cool for that 2 weeks ago, you know?
Yeah, that's actually funny because that was the thing I was going to say a couple minutes ago, which is the other approach is you just wait long enough and eventually all ideas will be implemented. For like 2 years, I've been playing around with this idea of a sort of an event scheduling site for, you know, you want to have a get together where you, you know, you're trying to pick a day for people to get together. And that process has always been way too painful for me, involving, you know, multiple rounds of emails. Can you do this day? Can you do that day? And so I had this idea of like everybody has a calendar and you know, you say what days you're available, and then the site kind of pulls that all together and then tells you the best day based on that. And over the years, various people have done something like it, but nothing really quite exactly what I had envisioned. Until like a couple weeks ago, this new site gets announced. It's like, boom. That basically, it's almost exactly what I had envisioned. Like, oh, okay, I guess I don't need to build that site now. But it's cool because I have it to use, and really that's what I want. I mean, most of these kinds of ideas are just things that I want to use. They're not like, ooh, this is some grand business idea that's, you know, going to make me rich. I just want to use them.
I think that like changes the perspective some, because if you're going into everything as if you want to get rich off of it, for most, you know, websites and services, the barrier to entry is so low that it's like, I mean, it takes a little bit of the impetus to do it. I mean, if you want something that you can use, maybe you make your own website, or maybe you can just get by with a Yahoo pipe or, you know, some kind of cobbled together service. But then if you actually do want to make a business out of something, it's always pretty simple nowadays for someone else to do the same thing. Like, for instance, I've been thinking about this with Stack Overflow and then the knockoff CN Prague. And I think that the, you know, Stack Overflow had a huge leg up because the guys promoting it are very popular in the programming community. And so, you know, it's you know, come play basketball with Shaquille O'Neal. You know, I mean, it's going to be popular. But it's still, you know, it's the barrier to entry on that sort of thing is lower. And then it's possible to kind of reverse engineer some of the, you know, the way that the site works and all that. So I don't know. I think that, you know, it's as a web business, what kind of things you can do if you really want to be in the web business for a long time. It's you really do have to provide some kind of service that's above and beyond what other people are going to do, or you do it for free and make your money off of ads and hopefully make the margins, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking out loud, obviously, but it seems like that for a lot of businesses that are easy to copy with low barrier to entry and you're not making your money off advertising, it's pretty difficult to think that your investment would pay off long term.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an excellent point. That, I mean, the thing that makes it easy for us to do it is that the barrier to entry is low, and the thing that makes it easy for other people to do it is that the barrier to entry is low. So that's certainly something that has to be factored in. And that's why it's, again, one of the reasons why, like, you know, this whole model of like quit your job and go get funding and try to hire 30 people and hope that you can turn it into a $100 million business, you know, is just so challenging. But, you know, if you can build something that's useful to you that nobody else is doing and maybe make a little bit of, you know, something off of that, that's great. That's, to me, that's kind of icing on the cake. Like, you know, I built Review2Q because it's something I want to use every week. And if I happen to get something extra out of it because other people find it useful, that's gravy. You know, and you can only do that because it's something that I can do in my spare time. And you know, I'm learning a ton doing it and it's kind of fun. And, you know, and in the end, if all I get out of it is that I have a useful site to me, then that's enough.
Yeah, the thing I remember what I was thinking about building was a recipe site. There's lots of recipe sites on the internet, but they all sort of irritate me. I think it could be done better. The only problem I have is where to get recipes from. I actually did a couple quick searches to see if there were like recipes licensed under a Creative Commons that, you know, were free to put on the sites, but that turned up a few hits. So it's something I'm still thinking about. Recipeoverflow.com will be the name.
Nice.
And then maybe, yeah, you know, throw in some restaurant reviews too.
That's another area where, you know, I'm constantly like, you know, using sites. The thing that's like really irksome to me these days is to-do list sites. Despite the fact that to-do lists is like one of the canonical like basic programming samples, all the to-do list sites out there kind of suck in various ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of makes me want to go write one that doesn't suck. So that's definitely another motivator for me is like, you know, there's these really useful services out there, but they just miss the mark somehow. And the recipe thing, I think, that's another great example. Because I agree, I have searched for recipes before, and the recipe sites that are out there are like atrociously bad.
They're very bad and usually very complicated.
They're like the experts exchange of recipe sites.
That's right.
Yep.
You know, link bait and linking you off to some crazy other site. And
yeah.
I just went to foodnetwork.com that has a lot of recipes, and it took about 25 seconds to load the page because there's so much stuff on it that I don't care about.
Yeah. And that's one where it's very obvious that it's a TV show that, you know, kind of as a side effect produces recipes, but that's, you know, they don't exist to provide you with recipes. So it shows on the site.
Right.
You know, and thinking about that, like there's the whole, if you were just doing this to run a business, it's hard to, I mean, unless you already kind of had some sort of funding or whatever, it's hard to think of doing this just to run it as a business. Like I was thinking about this recently. Scott Hanselman had a Hansel Minutia show where he was talking to Richard Campbell and he was saying, you know, like I forget, it was something to the effect that, you know, once I make my $1 million, I guess they decided it needed to be $4 million. But he said, you know, once I make my $4 million, you'll never hear from me again. And I don't really believe him when he says that, but I know that wouldn't go for me. Like if I had $4 million, I'd probably spend more time on nicer laptops, but I can't stop programming. Like, you know, and I think like the reason that we're like playing with computer programming in our spare time and stuff is not just because there isn't a better solution. It's partly because we can do it and we want to learn some stuff. And we know enough that when we're on a website that bugs us, we go, well, heck, I could do this. I just did something like this last week, you know, for work and, you know, and just, but I think so much of it is just, it's a compulsion, you know? So,
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree. I mean, like, if, you know, if Google swoops in and offers to buy Review2Q.com for $10 million, you know, that just means that I can go work on whatever other website I want to work on.
Right.
Doesn't mean I'm going to stop working.
The last thing I did to scratch an itch was something we were kind of talking about before with mobile development, or that we thought about talking about on the show. And that was trying to scrape traffic information to pull down on my phone for the state of Maryland. There's no good mobile site, at least there wasn't last summer, to go to find out, you know, traffic speed and look at traffic cameras and things like that.
Like 5 years ago, I got this. I noticed that there are a lot of websites and a lot of traffic sites, and none of them actually put the information together. And I still don't think they do, but that was something I played with for a while, was pulling together feeds, you know, and just saying, like, you know, it's not too hard to just say, okay, if traffic speed on this road is averaging, you know, 48 miles an hour, and it, like, find me not the shortest in distance, but the shortest for current time at the current traffic conditions, you know? And so I played with that and kind of sketched some stuff out, but didn't really. But at the time, everything was just kind of web pages, and you had to screen scrape it to get the data. And I figured that I actually saw somebody else had done something not quite that, but similar, and that their site had been broken when the HTML changed. And I was just like, you know, this would be a neat thing to play with, but to actually really do it right would take some work. But and then, of course, the whole idea of, like, personalizing it and being able to, you know, get your routes and get your, you know, maybe a daily email that says, you know, take this ride home, do, you know, that kind of stuff. But now I work from home, so that's taken away some impetus.
The mobile space is the interesting one right now, right? I mean, sort of the Web 2.0 gold rush has been replaced with the iPhone app gold rush, and everybody's going there to make their fortune. And, you know, I have had the same kind of thoughts in that space. It's like, you know, I have an iPhone, and there's apps I want, and it would be nice to be able to go and scratch that itch. My biggest problem is that going and learning that environment is just, when you're working on this stuff like an hour or two a day after work, you know, at the most, going and learning a whole new development environment, a whole new programming language at the same time is proving to be rather difficult. So, but the mobile space is certainly a very frothy one right now. And if you do have the means to do that, it's there's definitely some money to be made there.
I'm guessing it's gotten better now. The last time I played with mobile development, this was Windows Mobile on Windows Mobile 2003 SE or whatever. And it was a little bit less pleasurable than, like, getting your eyes poked out with hot sticks. It was, I guess hot sticks wouldn't be it. Maybe something hot and made out of metal would be more painful. But the point was, it was really painful. And, you know, just so many things, storing information and installation and distribution, and it was just horrendous. I was playing with an app, and the idea was, you know how they don't say it as much now, but when you would go into a meeting or something or training, they would say, go ahead and set your phone on stun mode, you know, and the joke being, like, you know, it's mute your phone. And so you do that, and then 2 days later you realize your phone has been muted and you've missed calls, and you get upset at yourself and the world. So my idea was, you know, you would stun, you go in and you'd say, mute yourself for, you know, 30 minutes or 2 hours or that kind of thing, and it would automatically turn itself back on. And I got it working, but never in a state that it was really redistributable, just because the platform just wasn't, I didn't think it was at the point where it'd be good. Now there's probably 40 million of them for iPhone hidden behind the Fart apps. But Kevin, you were playing with iPhone development for a bit. I mean, did you dig into it very much? Or
yeah, I started to, and like I said, I like it's it definitely takes some time commitment to go and learn it all. It's proven to be very challenging to me to find that time, and just, you know, the hour or two after work that I have. I also at one point had visions of, you know, learning Rails to do these kinds of little web projects, and it's the same kind of thing. It's like, you know, finding the time to both build it and learn an entirely new environment while you're building it in, you know, 4 hours a week is it's challenging. I've kind of stalled out on that, although it's something that someday I hope to be able to get back to. Of course, by the time I get back to it, the whole iPhone Gold Rush thing will be done and, you know, people will have moved on to the next thing.
I think we're just spoiled, you know. It's like we're so, I mean, not to say any of us are lazy, but I mean, we're spoiled by the web. It really is so easy to develop stuff and you don't have to worry about distribution. And it's as much as people complain about, you know, HTML and CSS and JavaScript, I mean, it's a really nice platform compared to just about everything else out there. So I think then when you go to actually developing any kind of software to be installed and downloaded and distributed and updated and serviced and all that, it's just like, it's painful, you know? So that's, I don't know. That's whenever I've thought of all that stuff, I'm kind of like, I'll go back to the web.
The other reason why I generally go back to the web is just that it's, the reach of it is so broad, you know, and it's so instantly, you know, usable by somebody. You throw up a website, you send them a link, and just about anybody you know is going to be able to, you know, look at your stuff and touch your stuff. And that sort of immediacy is very appealing in the sort of broad reach of the web. You know, there's no software to install, really. There's no, you know, you don't have to pay for it, generally speaking, at least to look at it. And you just access it anywhere. You know, I even if I don't have my iPhone with me, I can, you know, grab the nearest computer and do something, you know, useful on it. So it is still sort of my de facto platform of choice.
Yeah, I think that being able to share something and being able to, you know, potentially make money without ever having to ask for money is a nice thing. You know, like for instance, you've built a nice service. You may make some money off of the ads, but you never have to go, hey, you know, I can help you get some movie information. Just give me $5, you know. And it's not like $5 is all that much money. You know, we blow $5 all the time on ridiculous stuff. But when it comes to software, for whatever reason, I'm the worst at it. I don't want to do it, you know. It's like, well, there's got to be something better out there for free. So, I mean, and whereas on the web, there, you don't even have to have that conversation. It's just most things can be supported with advertisement for, you know, you're not going to get rich, but it's you might make more than you would if you actually tried to charge for the service.
I'm sure the guys at 37 Signals would disagree with you there. No free stuff. But obviously, it depends a lot on the service. But again, I mean, if I can make my thing self-supporting, then I will consider that a success. You know, and I've been thinking about this, that you don't necessarily have to hit like one grand slam. You know what I mean? Like, you could probably go and create 30 useful little websites that, you know, solve some very specific little problem that automates some little bit of pain in people's lives. And, you know, maybe one of them isn't a huge success, but by the time you get 30 of them, you know, and generally you write these things, they can be pretty self-sustaining on the web. You know, I don't really need to do anything to review to queue. It just sits there and runs on the website. Maybe by the time you build all that, then you could make some sort of aggregate business out of that that's more than just, you know, paying for the hosting.
I had a friend that, what was his deal? He had some sort of thing set up. I'd worked with him for a couple of years, and he was just kind of always, you know, thinking about other ideas and businesses and stuff. And one day he was talking at lunch about, he had this an automated eBay business where he was selling a PDF about reports on where to buy high-end women's handbags for low cost. It was something like that, you know, and he sold it for $8 to $10, and he had some kind of automatic auction, and he automated everything so it would, you know, as soon as the auction completed, he'd email it out, you know, and then if it didn't complete, it would automatically relist it, because this service lets you do that for free. And it was, and he said some people just bought it because they were able to get good feedback and build up their reputation, you know, and it was low cost, whatever. But for whatever reason, you know, and he's like, I don't know how many he sold a day, but, you know, it was a business, you know, and that's the kind of thing where it's like, instead of trying to think about how to make one huge business, I mean, you can make, you know, 20 micro businesses, just like you're saying. And they don't even themselves have to be self-sustaining. It's just, you know, little extra should Should we just wrap up there then?
Sure. Okay.
Okay.
www.reviewtoq.com. That's the letter Q, not the word Q.
Well, if you're doing the plug, you have to do the lead out too.
Oh, me? Okay. Well, we lost Scott K, so I'll do the lead out here. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Herding Code. We'll see you next week.
So it looks like I'm going to have to take off here.
Oh, Lord.
Yikes. All right.
Whoops.
She's not too happy.
All right. We'll paste in some audio.
Sorry about that.
We'll paste in audio from old calls. We'll make it work.
It'll work. Right. I only say like three things.
I think we should put that crying in.
Yeah.
That's got to go in.
It's the cry of the indie developer.
All right.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
Yeah. She's got some lungs.
Thank God that's over. Yeah.
He has got one difficult child.
Yeah. Yes. What else?
We should get a recording of that, though. Next time you have a guest on that's whining about something, just...
That's right.
Dump that in.